October 2025, the Pontifical Commission Tutela Minorum, created by Pope Francis in 2014 to prevent sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, published its second annual report. Although the document presents itself as a step towards justice and conversion centered on victims, its contents reveal deep tensions between the Catholic Church's official discourse and the institutional practices that have sustained decades of cover-up. Since its founding, Tutela Minorum has been a fragile entity. While it possesses legal personality and its own assets, its mandate is strictly consultative. It has no executive power or capacity to intervene directly in abuse cases. It depends on the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, which limits its autonomy and renders it, in practice, a toothless body. Its authority is, at best, symbolic. The report published early this month relies on data provided by the Conference of Bishops of the Catholic Church, which undermines its credibility from the outset. How much? Well, the Mexican case is emblematic in this on this issue. In its first report, Tutela claimed that the Mexican Episcopal Conference was in full compliance with Pope Francis' policies. However, here at Los Angeles Press, we proved that fewer than half of Mexico dioceses have created commissions to prevent clergy sexual abuse. Many of those commissions are composed also of clergy or lay people affiliated with conservative movements like Regnum Christi or Opus Dei. So whoever expects some criticism, some insight about how to actually address the issues there, well, better get a chair because it's not going to happen. It's not going to come from them. A year later, the figure of Mexican diocese, actually setting up a commission to prevent clergy sexual abuse barely exceeds 54%. Despite this evidence, the 2025 report does not correct the previous assessment. This omission suggests that Tutela was misled by its own methodology, a methodology that accepts without scrutiny the data provided by bishops, even when incomplete or manipulated. The narrative of full compliance in Mexico is not only false, it also perpetuates impunity and misleads victims. This year's report has good proposals. Tutela proposes a streamlined protocol for the resignation of ecclesiastical leaders in cases of abuse or negligence, mostly bishops. To prove how useful that would be, one only needs to see recent cases of abusive bishops, such as Ciro Quispe López in Peru and Jean-Michel Defalco in France, revealing that opacity remains the norm and that once one is a bishop, it is almost impossible to force that person to be accountable of his actions. Quispe López, now Emeritus Bishop of Juli, resigned following serious allegations. He is accused of maintaining relationships with at least sexual relationships with at least 10 women from his diocese, although other accounts go all the way up to 17 females. Despite this, the Vatican's official bulletin merely announced the acceptance of his resignation without offering any kind of explanation. Peruvian media revealed that Quispe used apps like WhatsApp to arrange encounters, some with vulnerable women. Despite the gravity of the case, Rome opted for silence. DeFalco's case in France is even more disturbing. Nearing his 84th birthday, he faces revelations of spiritual and sexual abuse. Mediapart, French digital media, published 130 letters this Bishop DeFalco wrote to a minor between 1987 and 1993 when DeFalco was a priest. In addition, other French media revealed he inherited a fortune of 17 million euros from a nonagenarian with no family ties. Despite these revelations, he has faced no institutional consequences for his behavior. Both cases illustrate the persistence of cover-up mechanisms and the lack of will to clarify the reasons behind episcopal early resignations, which is a way to disguise what is actually happening. No? In that sense, tutela's call for a protocol, it is something really useful at this point, but sadly, rather than using the scandal surrounding Quispe López' exit at Juli to bring clarity to his resignation, Leo XIV chose to institutionalize silence, sadly. A troubling aspect of the report is the use it does of the term focus groups. Tutela uses it to describe what actually are individual sessions with victims. They are very useful, and they clarify that these are not research or therapy focus groups, but the use of the term, the very use of the term focus groups, reveal the appropriation of a technical concept, one with some credibility in social sciences, without a methodological rigor. In the social sciences, when one talks about focus groups, one is talking about interacting immediately with participants who are connected by some feature, whether it's income, sex or gender, age, geographical origin, national origin, ethnic background, whatever you want to call it, you can do a focus group based on that. But in this case, there is actually no group to talk about. So what Tutela is describing are individual interviews, and this confusion only undermines the legitimacy of the approach, suggesting a rhetorical strategy more than the conscious use of an analytically valid tool to help understand what is happening with the clergy sexual abuse crisis. The report also addresses the cases of Italy and Portugal. In Italy, they talk about the proliferation of diocesan offices, which is a good development, but they also highlight how these many diocesan offices lack the necessary resources to operate. They also lack stable personnel. In some cases, they are only activated when required, when apparently required, and mostly they also lack audit mechanisms, not only money-wise, but also about the practices, about how they are trying to help, how they are trying to prevent or in some cases address cases of clergy sexual abuse. In Portugal, the situation is even more opaque. The official report was withdrawn without explanation. It was a good, well-prepared report. It was even available in English, besides the original in Portuguese. But it simply disappeared from the Portuguese bishop's website. Another issue in Portugal is that of the role played over the last 2 years there by the so-called Vita Group. It has some link to the church. Nobody is really able to figure out what is the nature of this link. It offers therapeutic services, but its purposes lack legal clarity and clearly stated goals. No? Tutela, wisely, I believe, warns about budgetary ambiguity in how Vita Group behaves and the very absence of policy evaluation mechanisms. The Portuguese church, like the Italian one, seems more interested in managing public perception, you know, how they are perceived by some sectors within the church, than in actually transforming their structures. This meeting was held shortly after the report's publication, actually 1 week from today, on Monday, October the 20th. Although the meeting was significant because it was the very first meeting of the Pope, the current Pope, with a group of survivors and more importantly, a group that actually is working to address the root causes of the clergy sexual abuse crisis, there was an omission in the Vatican's official bulletin. While the meeting was reported in the Italian version of the so-called bulletino, the bulletin, the daily bulletin that the Holy See, the Sala Stampa of the Holy See publishes, there was no mention of this meeting in the Spanish and English version of the bulletino, no? So this lack of an official mention in these two versions of the bulletin, despite Leo's symbolic effort to meet with ending clergy abuse and talk about how to address the clergy sexual abuse, could imply a message from the Roman Curia, those sectors of the Roman Curia able to play around, able to disperse some grumbling at the Holy See's website, to send a message about which papal meetings truly matter and which papal meetings do not matter, at least for them. No? This contradicts the spirit of repair and justice that Tutela and Pope Leo XIV seek to promote, no? Since its founding, Ending Clergy Abuse has consistently advocated for the creation of independent accountability mechanisms, the promotion of access to ecclesiastical archives, and the inclusion of survivors in reform efforts. One of its leaders, one of ECA's or Ending Clergy Abuse leaders, Matthias Kach was very wise, very mature in how he addressed this issue. He was more concerned with looking forward and with building a good working relationship. But even if that is acknowledged, one has to be aware of how these situations often happen up there in Rome. Well, that is the summary for this week's installment of our series on clergy sexual abuse. If you want to get in touch with us, you can fetch me at Twitter, what is now X. I'm there as RSNUNEC. You can find me there pretty much any time of the day. So thank you very much for reading us. Thank you very much for hearing this, and I hope you will continue to do so. Thanks.